Second one was Doug had asked for us to talk about what we do and how we might do it for the homeless folks who are hanging out in the building. The third one should be really quick, but we wanted to make sure that we're all on the same page, that we will be setting up a conversation over the next couple of weeks with elected officials and the board, talking about how we can better communicate and integrate our work on labor negotiations, and then make sure everybody's at the table and on the same page for it. So those are the three things that we're going to hit on.
A couple others that are real quick.
So we've got three things on the agenda. We don't add agenda items at the meeting, Doug. I'm sorry, man. We'll see if we have time.
Oh, you want to remove one?
We'll see if we have time. Let's get those three done, and then we'll. All right, we'll have time.
Is there a particular one that you're doing
them in? No. Well, Bill was already starting on the home rule, so we can just get, if it's okay, we'll just start on the home rule and kind of go from there. So go ahead, Bill.
Commissioner Mielke had submitted to the board a resolution calling for the election of freeholders, which, as you probably all know, begins the process to investigate the possibility of a home rule charter. We talked about this at the last elected officials breakfast last Wednesday, and it was the wish of the elected officials that they meet with the board to talk about this. In anticipation of that discussion, I prepared three documents. One is the draft resolution that Commissioner Mielke submitted. That's the first document. The second two documents are information documents that we put together, Kelly Sills and I put together, since I think we've been through this the most of anybody in terms of the last home rule charter process. So one has a green inserts, and again, general information that we think is probably pretty accurate comes from the Constitution and our experience and other information. So those are the three documents we have. And Mr. Chairman?
So these documents hopefully will provide some background information. Some of us have already seen it'll be new for you. Primarily, wanted to make sure we do first. This is something that our fellow elected officials had asked that we do, is get together and talk about this. And I wanted to kind of open it up to you guys as to what you'd like us to be talking about. Doug, Scott, Peter specifically mentioned it to me, saying, hey, you know, can we get together and talk about this? So I kind of want to, you know, open it up to you guys and say, you know, what is it that you'd like to talk with us about, and what kind of questions should we be talking through?
Well, I think the first question that we asked at the elected officials meeting was the problem, what you're trying to solve. I know we're going through a reconfiguration of looking at how we operate, and we spend a lot of money and energy on that. So I guess what is it that you're trying to fix or solve that might be broken or not working on?
Well, we're not concerned about money at this point. So we're just trying to have more citizen involvement, to where they have the ability to do what a charter does, and that's to allow initiative and referendum.
So initiative referendum is what you're asking for?
That's primarily what it is. I know that there's all kinds of
involvement
options out there. There's been a whole bunch of things thrown out there. It's loose ideas. It's a hoop. Removing some of the people from being elected and having other positions to be elected, that's not within the draft at all. What we're looking for right now is electing our commissioners from within the district they represent, referendum and initiative. What are those you wanted to address?
Well, I can address that from one perspective. One of the arguments that came up in 2011, when we were doing the educational rounds, was that why don't you just go ask the legislature to give non-home rule counties the authority to have referendum and initiative? And I believe you and Commissioner Bolt teamed up at least once or twice, and I think he even introduced it a third time, to introduce legislation to give that authority to counties, and it was denied by the legislature all three times.
Denied down party lines is what it was done. In fact, publicly, it was supported, and in fact, it was actually a my piece of legislation co-sponsored by Jim Moore, and supported publicly by one of the commissioners, and then one of the commissioners didn't like it, so she went up there and talk to the chairman and remove it.
So, you freeholders, it opens up to anything can happen. I know these are two things that you'd like to see, Tom. But it can go off in many different directions. And I was wondering the issue of participation in government. How much time is going to be taken? And we got the administration, you know, we already have the ability to engage people, engage the public in the activities of the public hearings. They do lots of things to get people engaged. So I assume it's any issues in terms of that you're trying to look at are issues that the board makes a decision on. So it's are you going to expect the board to, before they take it, make decisions, have public votes of which way to go, advisory votes, or do you want them, the public to tell you what to
do? What the freeholders do, they put something together to take to the voters to see if the voters want it. And I guess if they want to have it fail, they would put something on there that's not very popular with anybody, and they want to. To succeed, they put on something that would best represent the majority of the people.
I'm talking home. After, if we did have home rule, that's what I'm talking about, and how, where
any initiative that would go forward to change anything, absolutely the vote of people.
I think what he's talking about, Commissioner, if I may, Doug, may interpret your words, given the experience that we've had before. When the freeholders were elected, this is what they came up with. It was a multi-page document that was put to the voters. It was put to the voters in 1, 2, 3, 4 different questions, 4 different propositions. But what Doug is saying is it won't be just initiative and referendum that the freeholders could adopt a charter to talk about. I believe that's what you're saying.
It could be a big dark cloud of the whole thing, but people have to vote yes or no.
Can I jump in? Doug, I think you bring up a good point, and that is we can get very much involved in the process of making this happen, and really cannot answer the most fundamental question: what are we expecting to gain? What is this bias? And just as a pretty good indicator as to what kind of history this generates with the other counties that have already gone down this road, I've got an example here, actually a list of powers that or legislation that has been granted by the people in the other 6 counties that have gone down this road. Most of them are to create new expenditures, new things, new programs. For instance, to authority to promote tourism, to establish public ambulance utility, a new B&O tax on ambulance businesses, create pedestrian malls.
I looked at things. I was under the understanding that they couldn't put anything on there that has to do with financial impact.
Are these are the initiatives.
Things that were proposed or things that were passed.
I think I'm reading something wrong here. It says these topics are not likely to be subject to initiatives right now.
Right. Yeah,
right. So I've got it.
Yeah. I think
there's a big budget stuff
right.
Going on.
Okay.
I have a list of what all the counties, what they have done.
Say again?
You have a list of what they already
comparative
have done?
Comparative charter initiative make. I have initiative make.
That the list? I mean, last year, 2 years ago, when we went out, we did a work session afterwards, so like a test thing. And so those people that showed up, we said, here's a list of things. How would you vote yes or no?
We have that. We don't have what he said. What he's saying is this is what the charter counties actually have done.
That's what I thought.
Do you have copies of that or not?
No, I can go copy.
What is it?
It's called Comparative Charter County Initiative Matrix. It's what the counties in their charters, what they have the power to have initiative and referendum for.
Is that just initiative and referendum, though?
Yes.
They have the power to do that, but they have to go through a vote of the people.
Well, there's been lots of different powers. I mean, there's King County went nonpartisan.
This is
for all.
All this is what does the individual charters for these counties say about initiative and referendum?
That's just
right.
Initiative
and
referendum.
The question is, only initiative and referendum. So in other words, those counties that have already become chartered, what can't they do?
Can the initiative and referendum in Clallam County appropriate money? No. In King County, no.
But what happened?
What have they done?
That's the question.
What have they enacted?
I don't have that.
That would be a good.
I think
there's two questions here. What changes in the form of government has the charter process done in those six counties? And then secondly, through the initial referendum process, what have citizens in those counties
done? That's a good question.
Mm-hmm. Have the efficiencies been improved?
So those are two things
and
we need.
Has the cost gone down? From what I've been told by other elected officials in those counties, actually the efficiencies became less and the costs went up.
Generally, they're not looking at the whole picture when they're doing a single issue. They're not looking at the downstream and upstream impacts associated with
that. It's much more expensive to run.
I would have to see that because I don't think that's possible.
I guess where I can come in on this is we are reaching close to 500,000. Mm-hmm. And so, I think the question does need to be start asking, do we need new commissioners? Is the form of government, should we move to, a county executive with a county, council? I mean, those are the different types of charters that are out there. Mm-hmm. And currently, you have, as commissioner, you have some legislative, some administrative, duties. A lot of times, charter counties, they've decided to divide that up. And it's like, is that something that when our county gets bigger, is that what we see is where we should go? Or,
I think six out of the six, at least four of them have a county executive and a council. I think there are two of them. We'll get the information, but I know that
county administrator.
Well, King, Snohomish, Pierce all have county execs,
Whatcom
all have county execs.
Clallam and San Juan have a county administrator.
Okay, so so four out of them.
I believe the appointed official in San Juan is called a county manager.
I see it in some of those. I think about King County. At one time, they had 13 councilmen, commissioners. They're back to 9. Some had 3, went to 5, 6, or something like that. Those are examples that were brought before the people and the people voted for. But usually, anything that in the charter that's brought before the people has to be a vote of the people. So it's not something that they just automatically do.
I would suggest that one of the things that we do is to contact Washington Association of Counties and have them compile a list of all the whatever has been voted on by any of these charter counties. That'll tell us exactly what have they done with this power.
Yeah. What I'd like to see is
all environmental issues is what a lot of it was.
Yeah, a lot of them are like in King County, like plastic bags, a lot of this comes to issues. But I'd like to, kind of get feedback. Those counties that have done it, that have the executive, that have the county councils, do they think it's worked out for them? Has it been a hindrance to getting things done? I mean, that's the real bottom line. Is this going to make government more efficient?
Well, I guarantee as we get bigger, there will be more and more pressure on, putting the power of both executive, administrative, and legislative all in the hands of three people will come up. I mean, it'll absolutely be part of the charter.
If
it's not part of the initial, I'm sure it will come, soon thereafter.
We can five commissioners now.
Yeah, we can do that in statute as a code county. We could go from 3 to 5 through a vote of the people.
Right.
Yeah, you have to go to the people, but like we could put it to a vote this November. We could say, hey, you want to move from 3 to 5. That is something you could do without a charter. But the only thing that passed the last time, it was super close for the underlying charter, mm-hmm. and there's been 3 votes on charter?
The first one was on city-county consolidation.
Oh, that was okay. And then, so it was super close as far as the underlying charter, and then the only aspect, because it was a laundry list of what things might you want in this charter, which was an interesting way of doing it. The only one that passed was going to commissioners by district. That's the only one that actually passed.
Quite substantial, and the other one missed by 87 votes.
So the underlying.
But that was even though, in my opinion, that it was muddied up. And I think that when someone looks at the advantages it is for the citizens of Clark County, that and that's who we serve, that it would be a benefit for them to keep us in check that way. I don't think there's any of the counties that became charter counties that removed themselves from that.
I can give you the vote. The last charter, there were four votes. Shall we have a charter? No. 50%. Do you want to increase the number of commissioners? No. 61%. Do you want to elect the commissioners by district? Yes. 58%. Do you want to include charter initiative and referendum? No. By 52%. So those are the votes.
In Yakima County, home rule went down by a huge margin, and it was probably the last county to vote.
Yakima.
And there again, it depends what was put forward to the voter.
Right.
This here, I didn't realize, I thought it was two parts. Obviously, it was four parts. You got to get four parts to pass in order to...
No, you just had to get one. And people were... And it was confusing.
It really was.
Because it was like, you got to pass this one for these other three to even have a chance. Because even the one that passed doesn't matter because you're not a charter. So. But I like the idea of getting... Because we're speaking anecdotally about what's happened in other places and all of this. It would be a great idea to get from Wasac, I think they'd have it, or otherwise we can get it. Yeah, exactly. To find out what, first of all, what is included in the charters for each one of these jurisdictions that went to a charter county, and second of all, what votes have been taken, what powers have been utilized by the citizens by going
to
vote.
Just get a copy of all the ballot measures.
I looked at this, too. This is an expensive process to go through. Last time, it was, as it's written in the CTED study, was close to $4 million that Clark County spent. That's in kind, most of it. There was some cash. But it was a lot of time spent by staff. And I know Tom sat on it on the home rule chart. I get concerned with, we're spending time on reconfiguration. We're looking at another layer of doing some organization, and we as elected officials are trying to do the best we can, all of us, to run a professional, efficient operation. And with the leadership of this county administrator and the other elected officials, we're making every effort to be as efficient and effective to our citizens as possible. So I'm concerned when we're talking about this shift of trying to deal with our budgets and the 4% increase in expenses every year, because that's the way our environment is, and we don't have the 1% ability to increase property taxes. It makes it real tough.
So that's a question that we can also get an answer to, is what are the potential costs? If we're looking at what are the potential benefits in any analysis, you look at the cost benefit of it, and what are the potential costs, whether it be structural or financial. So we can get information on that about what the potential, what has it cost in the past, what might it potentially cost through the freeholder. We can get answers to
and,
that.
And we've done that in
question.
The past, and it's, that tends to turn people off.
And we can get information on that.
You're concerned about the cost.
That too, yeah. I mean, there's lots of things.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just make a point that one of Thomas Edison's first lessons was you never invent something unless you have a clear problem you're going to solve with it. And the question is, do we have a problem here to solve? And I tell you, as the new guy in the block, I love the power closest to the people. Empowering people to participate in government, I really like that aspect of it. But the status where we're at right now, especially from my point of view, as a new guy who's going through the process of getting orientations within hours with every department and all the features of the staff of government here. Clark County shines. We are innovative. We are leading the state in so many ways. We are not broken. And we can get some benefits. The people have already expressed that they like the idea of the commissioners being elected by district. I wish we could get that. That would be nice. Be able to support that. But in order to get that,
we open up the door that any 50% plus one vote in the future can change the structure of this government that is functioning very, very well now. They can elect a county administrator as a make a Bill Barron's position an elected position. That's just 50% plus one vote.
Thank you, but vote me in the office.
you can veto several things, but that would be the exception. So yes, you can get some benefits going down this road, but we are in a very healthy position. This is a wonderful form of government. It is a lot of work for three commissioners. It's a lot of work. We sit on a lot of governing boards.
We're not talking about changing form of government.
Well, see, that's the door that you open, though.
Mm-hmm. If you open the door,
you can change the form of government with 50% votes plus one.
You're saying you don't trust the voters to take care of their own government. We, the people.
The government, this uniform government that has been defined by our Constitution, that's what, and we've been this way for 100 and some years, and it has served our county very, very well. And as soon as we open this up to a 50% vote, it can change the structure of this. Doesn't matter what the wind, which way the winds may blow, and it may be informed, it may be smart, but we open up that avenue to significantly change this form of government in ways that we, at this point, don't foresee.
I agree kind of what you said. My main focus is that I want to know, what does government need to look like when we're at 750,000? What does it look like when we're at a million?
And I'll be dead.
Yeah.
Speak for yourself, man.
We keep having great growth, but I want to, there have been some planning by us as elected officials saying, when we reach these different plateaus, when does it make sense to go and say, this having three commissioners or whatever it is isn't sufficient to really completely represent the people that are out there. That's what I really want.
It's a good question, actually, as far as, are there metrics that you can apply to kind of to figure out, is there a threshold for something like that?
Yeah.
And
I don't know. And the examples are San Juan Island is the smallest county in the state.
Yeah, they are a charter.
And they're a charter. And King County is a charter.
Yeah, it's a couple of the smallest, and then all the biggest, except for Spokane.
They were all political reasons, though, why they did that. I mean, they focused on the islands, but like they weren't being represented in each island. No. But they sort of backtracked a little bit, too, in that process. And you find, like, a lot of these, King County, for example, all the positions they took as nonpartisan have all, as professional positions, have all gone back, except for the treasurer, to elected positions. Yeah, so
they had the sheriff appointed for a while in King, and then they got rid of that because they realized, wait a minute, we don't want to be in charge of the sheriff.
I might want to address Peter's comment, because being a student of this and having written my thesis on this in graduate school, one of the metrics would be interesting. Full information, wouldn't it?
I know, how'd you do on it? Yeah, exactly.
I would. One of the things that happens is the reason the Constitution has two ways to do the charter government is that it presumes, I think the founders presume that, and this is the way it is in most states where they have the ability to become home rule, and I'm only familiar with Washington and Illinois as practical examples, but the reason there's two ways to do it is for the people to be able to petition their government to say, hey, we think because of political scandal, political circumstance, population growth, whatever the concern might be of the public, to get enough signatures to petition the government that you have to do it. Or the government itself can do it because of what they, as elected officials, you collectively as elected officials say, hey, we've reached, boom, we've got to do it. Now, there are some states where you hit that population, the elected office has to consider it. Where you have to have some kind of contemplative process to say, whoa, we're here, we better think about what we're doing. So your question's well asked, but there's not a lot of requirements. So when you reach those metrics, but that's my argument is, at least as a student of politics, is that's why the Constitution holds two ways to do it. Because if the people don't think they're doing their job, then they, by God, can say, hey, we want you guys to do this. if they feel elected official-wise collectively with you that, hey, there probably is a need because of whatever, then they can do, then either way you can do it. That would be one answer to the question.
Thank you. That's a good point, and that's what I started with, was it puts checks and balances in place that the citizens can use to protect themselves against their government. I never fear the voting public, because that's the people that we represent.
Of course, you got 68%.
Checks and balances. I'm all for checks and balances and limited power of government. Help me understand what you mean by that. When you say checks and balances, are you referring to the initial referendum process?
Yes. So for example, we did something really bad here at the Board of County Commissioners. Through referendum, they could come back and reverse that.
Okay. Well, thanks for that that view. I think, you know, as we talked earlier, more information about what the initiative of the referendum that has been submitted at these charter counties would be illuminating to that point.
Yeah.
Just a couple of examples here of that they list for the reason for going this approach. One is this: to neutralize special interest groups, to curtail corruption, to put pressure on public officials.
Is this, I'm sorry, these are reasons
what are their arguments for and against the initiative and referendum process, which is the main thing we're trying to
do. Got it.
So those are the reasons. The question, are we experiencing those? Is that the problem we're trying to solve here? Are the people we need to solve?
I just let you know I'm watching you guys, so I have checks and balances.
I see when people really have an issue, they show up in the bike.
Sorry, Scott.
Is that better?
There you go.
Is that better? Okay. Yeah. When people have an issue, they show up at the commissioner's meeting, and it's the same people quite frequently, and they have this, you know, they have their concern, and then you guys know what they are before they walk up, because they keep coming back, and sometimes it's a limited group, you know, that then end up, you know, have a small voice, but then end up getting something done. So I know when we went through this last year in 2011, we went through six classes or
seven.
So I went to every single one of them, and
some blood officers in
Kansas, you know, the class size kept getting smaller, and I got to vote in time, but
power of the people.
Power of the people. And so, you know, there just wasn't, you know, the momentum. You know, obviously, I ran on the platform. You know, do I think this position, you know, has anything to do with partisan? I think most of us agree that it, you know, it doesn't. I mean, but you know, I did win, and I came from, you know, not from the arena political, and I was successful. And on that platform, you know, since taking office, I've had some change in views, and have the judges responsible for my position would be very scary.
Where does it say that?
It's an option. And so versus the commissioners, you know, because there's a couple of judges that have different opinions. And, you know, I'm trying to do it.
That's a really nice way to put it, yeah.
Like 10 of them?
Yeah, 10 different opinions, and it's tough, because I'm trying to give up the paper. Mm-hmm. And so I'm dealing with to actually change the way I'm dealing with peer pressure. So I've got judges that are willing to take it on and show the other judges how well it works. So I'm over the 50%, so I would be safe, like LA District Court, you know. You know, she's pretty secure that she has a majority, and she's doing the right thing. On the other aspect, being elected, you know, the return of your phone calls. You know, when people do call and email me personally, you know, I make it a point to get back to them. Can't always help them, but I can find them the right person, or explain what we can and cannot do. So it's mixed, and like I said, after getting elected, that what doesn't as many people excited about the charter. So
I can give you another example. I'm from North County. And North County, in the primary, we vote in our district. and I represent North County very well. And I usually poll between 68% and 70% in a contested race. In the general election, we vote countywide, and I lose. So therefore, everybody in North Clark County, or that 70% of the people that voted for me, lost their representative. So they're not being represented. It makes it very important that you have to be held accountable.
But isn't the other opponent in your district too? So the district doesn't lose its representation. It's not like someone from Vancouver is running against you. It's someone from your district that's running.
Well, yep. Here's Betty Sue, for example. You know where she lives. That's in Hazeldale. And that was a perfect example. And to prove my point, I ran against Steve Stewart and did very well. Until we had outside interference. Others, you went. I've had a loss this year. but I mean, that's the point I'm saying.
Well, Tom, but your point, the way it's currently established is you have to reside in the district. You know,
you have to live in
that district. Mm-hmm. Now, you might find it unfortunate that someone who lives on, near the edge of the district, is victorious at one point or another, but you're going to have some sort of boundaries there, and you can't very well say, here's the district, but to be a candidate, you can't live more than 1 mile close to that boundary. So I guess I'm more on the side of, the way it's set up currently, people in each individual commissioner district are going to have a representative on the county commission, board of county commissioners. It certainly may be from time to time that the winning candidate lives close to the boundary, but they are representing that district.
Well, and it doesn't, I mean, honestly, I mean, if I want to be selfish about it, I mean, selfishly, if the one thing that passed is vote by district, I'd have to liberal it up a little bit to be able to keep one in my district. But I get 60 plus in my district, and if I liberaled it up a little bit, I could probably get more. I mean, I have a job for as long as I'd want it here. So personally,
talk to Senator Don Carlson about the beauties of running in a small district and being elected in a district.
So there's good that, and then like if you went to an exec system versus if you had an exec and legislative, then it makes the council's job a lot simpler and it's more straightforward because it's legislative policy and you don't have executive functions associated with it, or it gives someone that wants to run countywide and thinks they can win the opportunity to run the organization as they want. So, I mean, there's benefits individually, but I don't know if it's necessarily, I don't know what problem it would be solving, because you represent North County great, but you also recognize other interests around the county, which I do as well. I mean, you've heard me a million times talking about, I grew up in North County. I grew up in Ridgefield, so, and I like being able to represent other interests in other areas and not have to liberal it up and be only in one district.
But your job under the statutes, it represents the county. You are border to border, border, and we are agents of the state, and they tell you what your job is and what you have to do from border to border. So it doesn't matter which one of you that I need to talk to about an issue. You all are going to be engaged and involved in it. And I know, Tom, that probably the majority of the people here live in your district. And so you represent us here and represent the issues that we deal with.
They're all living out of this. They probably most of them.
That's not a bad example.
You're in Davidson?
Yeah.
I got nothing, man. I got nobody in the room.
All your constituents would be city constituents.
As a state representative, I was elected by the 18th district. I represented all of the state. Right. Governor is elected from within the state and represents us throughout the whole United States and on some of those issues. So this is different. This here is that I'm from a district that I'm voted on outside my district. Right. All the others are voted in your district.
Kind of going back to the original thought, it sounds like there are a couple of threads here, though. One of them is getting more information about what is the problem we are looking to solve. And that's going to take people who have been advocates for this, really saying, what is it that we're trying to to empower citizens to do that they cannot do today or that they don't feel like they can do today.
And I think Bill gave that number when he broke it down there, the number to elect your commissioners within your district. I think he said it was 58%.
Yeah, it was. So I mean, that's one piece of it. And then the second piece of it is really looking at, all right, what's been done with that power, you know, and really getting some quantitative information as opposed to all I have, which is anecdotes, on what other people, other counties have done or not done. And so it would be interesting for me to see, like, what have they done with all of this? What is the structure of government and how it's changed? And what have the citizens put on the ballot? Yeah, what have the initiatives been?
Yeah, they really haven't moved that much. And I thought I gave you a copy of that. I gave you a copy of what I got from Olympia. They've always started it. And then I think Anna put it in your book. And it goes back and it goes through all six counties.
And what they've done.
Tells you where they are and what they've done.
Oh, okay. So we may already have that information.
Yeah. Does it say what they've done in terms of initiatives and referendums that they've placed on the ballot?
No. In the
so we'll have to get that part.
In the government makeup.
Okay. So we'll have to get the initiative or referendum part of it, but we have a structure part.
I don't know what they've done with the district referendum, but the point is that we need to be accountable to them, and that does give them a check and balance on the government. And they should have.
So what other questions do we need to answer, you know, as we're exploring this idea? What other questions, you know, from other electives or from any of us, really?
I'd like to get feedback from some of the other counties, what the pros and cons of what they think of what they're doing within their government, you know. Mm-hmm. How's it worked, how's it hasn't. What things would they like to change?
You want that from the executive part or the legislative part?
I think
one of us
need to do that.
We need to go through a couple of elections.
Yeah, there's definitely been some back and forth.
One other point, and that is that if we are basically trying to identify a problem, a general problem, or maybe the people aren't representative enough, then we ought to turn that into some specifics as well. Mm-hmm. And that is, what problems are there specifically that we feel like the people are being not very well served? I mean, we really need to have some specific examples here.
And
otherwise, it's trying to come up with a problem that's not present.
Right.
What are we envisioning for the future? And if it would be a future problem, then maybe it would be a future solution. This is not the time.
Well, in North County, certainly, I mean, historically, I mean, there was the River County movement to actually, like, get out of Clark County because they felt so disenfranchised and didn't feel like they were being represented because the population base in Vancouver was so, you know, basically, I mean, you had a Democratic County Commission for 30-some-odd years, and a lot of times it was 3-0. And so, you know, people, the conservative folks in North County were like, well, I got nobody who shares my view and vision of the world. We're not in that world now. I mean, we're in a world where it is much, and we have tight elections between R&D. You know, we've had a Republican majority since 2008. So, you know, it is definitely shifted that part of the conversation away from being like, you know, we have no representation to, all right, we've got a good shot at representation if it's the right person to represent the community. So that's changed.
Yes,
you know.
That's why elections are supposed to solve those problems, and the three districts being about the same number of voters is supposed to leave that fair. It's very different at the state level. At the state level, the population base runs the same.
True.
And that's not the problem we have here. This is equal every time we do a adjustment of the lines, it's to make sure it's brought back to equality so that representation comes down to elections.
Well, not really.
No.
The county votes completely different than the rest of the state. Portland votes completely different than the rest of Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
So in a micro vision of that, Vancouver votes a whole lot different than East County or North County.
But and historically that played out in countywide elections, but over the past 10 years at least, over the last 10 years, that's no longer the case. Now the population has diversified and you have more population centers that have built in other areas so that Vancouver doesn't dominate the vote, certainly doesn't dominate like Portland or Seattle. It's not even close. It used to be that way, but I mean, that was kind of my point, is that if it still did, then neither of you guys would be here. I mean, that's just the reality of it.
I'm worn down.
Got a question that is, it's supposed to be an hour meeting, what, 50 minutes into it, can the other two action items, can we push those off to have a separate discussions about those?
So we're actually scheduled till 4. So we just tell you 3:30 because we tell David 3:30 because then we get out of here by 4. So, you know, it's like when you tell someone to show up a half an hour early, you know, then because you know they're going to be late. So it's like that. So we have no time. I don't know if you guys have until 4, though.
Yeah. So my daughter gets out at 3:30. So
I got a couple of
I know you do, but if you have to leave, I want to prioritize that as far as... So there were two other pieces of the discussion. One of them was specific to something you brought up. So let's... is there any other information we need to talk through or bring up as far as home rule today? Continuing discussion. Obviously, we're going to be getting more information, and we'll come back, and we'll have more discussion.
I would suggest that we invite each person here, anybody you can think of, to bring forward specific examples of what initiatives and what referendums you can envision would find their way to the ballot if we go to the charter. What would that look like?
I've got one. Invocation during the hearings. Some people liked it, some people didn't. The majority of the people didn't like us having invocation during the hearing. Through a referendum process, they could remove it.
We have that ability now because hear me out. When Bronson Potter advised us, the way that we can get things on the ballot is that we as a commission pass a resolution. And then we give it out to the advisory vote that says whether or not you agree with that resolution. So that results.
So the difference would be it would be compulsory.
I assume if we're
put it on the ballot with a majority vote that you would respect. I agree. Yeah. Glad the president here. We're not putting it on the vote yet, all right? It was just an idea. All right. Anything else on home rule before? Because I know that we want to discuss the interaction communication associated with the collective bargaining. So, and Peter, you brought the topic up. So, I mean, kind of tell us what you're thinking about.
Well, I guess the last thinking is,
as a precursor to this, my hope is that this isn't the meeting because we need to get HR and everybody else in the room for that. This is what do we need to get to be ready for that meeting? You know, what information we need? What do we need to bring? What do we need to be thinking about? So
I guess the thing is it seemed like that we went through the contracts we're negotiating, and we didn't feel. I think as elected officials, that at the very beginning that we were sitting there talking was, I'd like to see all of us as elected officials sitting down before they even present a contract for the first time going, what language is in there, do we want to change? What do we want to do with salaries? Because there's things that are in that contract, there's language that impacts us within our office and the way we're functioning in the office, and we're going through it happens, and I keep notes, I would like this portion of the contract to be changed because when I was doing X, it led to Y, and that wasn't something I wanted, and I know when we renegotiate contracts, that can happen. But those things can only be addressed, and we can only go and work through those as if at the very beginning, even before that first offer is put out on the table, we're sitting together, and what I'd like to do is say, if there's contract language that we want to be changed, say, okay, we're doing this as a coalition, we have elected officials come and say, I would like to have this language changed, and then everyone, get a chance to talk about it, discuss it, the pros and cons, and decide if that's when we go forward, if we're going to do coalition as a group, that it's also going to include that language in there.
What I'd like to be able to do is propose a solution, and that would be to define the policy, the process that we go through that would really respect the elected officials, their authority, their freedom to be able to have a say-so in their own staff. And that policy would go something like this. Anytime there's going to be a new contract to be negotiated, the starting point would be the elected official. They'd be the first one to be able to go through what is existing and then recommend changes. And so there's really a team. The department, the elected official, the county administrator, and the three commissioners. We would participate on that. And before any talks happen with any unions, they don't have the authority to offer anything or put anything on the table unless it's pre-authorized by those individuals. As it proceeds through, still, what gets put on the table and what gets offered is really controlled by that process. When it's all said and done, and you arrive at a decision, you don't have a contract unless that elected official signs off on it first, and the county administrator, and majority of the commissioners.
So here's the complexity to that, because a lot of our bargaining units, and the one that Peter had mentioned yesterday in the public hearing is a good example of this, is that the bargaining unit includes employees from a lot of different departments, including the assessor's office, but also including other departments that are directly under the auspices of the county administrator and, by extension, us. So the question becomes, whose authority is it? By statute, the authority is ours. They don't, and I was giving him flack about it when I first came in, they don't take the vote. We take the vote. We're the ones who have to take the vote. On the contract, just like we're the ones who have to take the vote on the budget, and it's easy from the standpoint of never having to actually take the vote to either support or not support something. It's a lot harder when you actually got to sit up at the dais, because I got scars 8 years long of taking these votes. So from the standpoint of how decisions are made, the process of including people in the conversation, trying to reach consensus, I think is a great idea. The challenge is, what happens when there's a disagreement? What happens if Peter says, yeah, you know, I don't agree with these terms. But the majority of the bargaining unit is outside of this department, and we're the ones who have to take the vote. We say, hey, this is what we need to do to get done. And that's the challenge, I think.
I know it wasn't intentional, Steve. But the use of the word Peter's department.
Fair enough. That, you're right. It was unintentional, but it's well stated.
I know it wasn't.
It's well stated. It's well stated.
I know it was unintentional. I'm not an attorney. I don't understand have a full understanding of the, as you say, statutory requirements related to this. But I continue to work hard to maintain my independence as an elected official.
Always.
And it has been the county's practice since I've been here for each of the elected officials to sign that contract. And I will also offer up that the auditor's office, has certainly had a representation on those negotiating committees and have had an opportunity to give input.
But not to us. I mean, not in the initial, like, here's the parameters for negotiation.
Yeah.
And that's an additional step that we could take that I think Commissioner Medora is saying. Even before we get around the bargaining table, you know, to have the conversation and say, all right, what parameters are we setting here? Because that is what we do, and that's absolutely something we can include elected officials into.
Because to your point, Steve, let's say Local 11 is a perfect example. There's a lot of things that it reaches across, I think, all three of our offices. And so we're all stakeholders, and yes, we have to go and do it with the union. And so when we're talking about that contract, those stakeholders, each of the stakeholders, we should have equal say. And you know, maybe I want something, but you know, and it happens in our joint lobbying meetings all the time. But Greg and Doug don't like it. You know what? I lose. You know, that's the way it works now when we're dealing with stuff like the joint lobby. When we have these things that are across, you know, we go in there and say, yep, there's people from the county, there's people from the assessor's office. You know what, I guess we get equal say and we work toward, you know, agreement. I think between the four of us and the language, we can discuss it and decide what we want.
Yeah, you know, as since I'm kind of speechifying here, I also want to make sure that I bring to your attention the value I place on the infrastructure that you, the commissioners, provide to us. I have had the either misfortune or fortune, whatever you want to describe it as, working very closely with human resources over the past several years. And it is a great luxury to have that professional resource available to me. And so while I maintain my independence, I also am very grateful for the infrastructure and the resources that the county commissioners provide to me.
Thank you for saying that. It's not about the commissioners as much as, I mean, our HR staff gets beat up a lot because they're in a tough spot.
Well, I used to. I beat them up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, but it's nice. I mean, it's good of you to say that. I know that they'd appreciate it.
And I appreciate that, Greg. And let me, if I may, just supplement.
Legal and the HR and, yeah, all the stuff.
Supplement. That's the job of, in some interpretation of some of the statutes, of what the commissioners are supposed to do for the elected officials, is provide, there's a legal terminology in the statutes that the good health and care of the elected official shall be the responsibility of the Board of Commissioners. And I take that very seriously, as you know, Greg. I think you and I know that. And that the I appreciate that compliment, but that everything we do and every communication that you've seen me send out with regard to any kind of policy, whether it's human resources, purchasing, legal service, whatever it is, it's the elected officials complying with any county board policy is voluntary. I always use that term, don't I, Glenn? Glenn and I, since I've been here, and I hold the independence of the elected official sacrosanct. I do. I know we need to look at the policy now, and thank you, Peter, for bringing it up. But we need to look at that. But just so you know, my position as their delegated representative in some of these things, I hold that elected official independence sacrosanct, and I will always provide you with the highest quality of internal services.
So kind of going back to what Commissioner Lador was saying, one of the things, I guess, then would be, in following up with them, I mean, is looking at what kind of upfront process as we come into the next round of negotiations of contracts, what upfront process can we create and put into policy so that there is that initial conversation with elected officials who not only know their staff well but know the ins and outs of how it works within your shop is actually getting what you need to be successful. And then so that is in policy, that it's written down, that it isn't something that we're just kind of saying, yeah, maybe we should do that, but that we actually make that's how it's going to happen. And so that's something that we can develop. I mean, that we can all develop as far as making sure that upfront, because it sounds like, and I think for the most part, there's been, representatives during the bargaining process from each of the elected officials' offices, or at least from Greg's office, and you're raising your eyebrows like maybe you haven't had that.
And if
that's not true, then that needs to be made clear as well.
There's communication. You have a representative to communicate to the other elected officials.
So why don't we, should I start the meeting that way? When we have, should I have to draft something up for people to? Would that be a good? What I'm asking is, would that be a good starting point for the meeting that we really have about this?
I believe policy.
Is have something drafted by HR so you can, and we'll send it out in advance of the meeting, and so that can be a starting point.
Sounds good to me.
Yes, and I think if any of us want to contribute to that, then we would go ahead and send an email.
Oh, why would we have that meeting?
and
of course.
So one of those components that we think is that the signature on that elected official needs to be right out at the first signature on that contract. And if legally the commissioners cannot delegate that authority that says if your signature's on there, we don't have a contract, if that be the case, well, at least that official has a place that says, yeah, I agree with this, or the absence of that signature says, well, I'm sorry, we couldn't come to an agreement. And whoever signs after that, I guess probably the commissioners, will acknowledge there's a missing signature there, but that's the best we could do.
That certainly would be part of it, and I would hope that Daryl Walker, gentleman sitting at the end of the table there, will help us do that.
Yeah, I would just say, just applying that listen to it, I'd be very surprised, it may happen, but I'd be very surprised if the elected officials weren't consulted prior to the contract because they should be consulted prior to the contract because they own the contract. They work as Christian pointed out, they know their individuals, they know the employees, they know what they want, they know some of the problem areas in the contract, so they certainly should be consulted in advance, well in advance, and there should be a sheet of, you know, these are the things we need to fix. We need to fix paragraph, this paragraph, this paragraph, this paragraph. These are our wants, these are our needs. This is what I need as the elected official, and these are the problems I see within the organization. So that definitely should be happening. If it's not, I'd be surprised, but if we need a policy to reaffirm that and reify that, then I think that is certainly,
Well, Darryl, I guess, you know, that kind of happens. We did provide that, but if you provide that and then they go out and negotiate the contract and their first proposal out didn't include those suggested changes that would make it better run for our office, they're not included in there. At that point, then we've lost, right?
Well, I think that certainly would be an issue. I don't understand. I don't know why that would occur, but that would be an issue between you and them and me, as far as, well, Peter has Peter wants X, Y, and Z. Why didn't you have that in your proposals? I don't know why there would be that sort of dichotomy.
Well, unless Ray and I disagreed with what you were wanting to do, or Scott, and he felt that the way it did now was fine.
Yeah. Right. It, again, it cuts across the maybe multi-elected officials that are affected, but. I would hope that we could, you know, come to an agreement about what's important.
I would say that we don't want to imply that our HR office is taking licenses on their own and they're going off doing their own independent thing and it's not related. Somehow they're not serving the rest of the staff here. That's not to be implied. In fact, they're doing a very good job, but it's really kind of undefined. Right now, if we don't have a clear definition that says if you are going to be able to be equipped with what the terms to go negotiate, those negotiating points ought to be clearly defined before you go talk with the other side of the table.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'd be very surprised if anybody in HR disagree with that.
Well, then we can be a problem and make it a formal policy.
Put some shape behind the negotiations and getting the input from the elected official, I think, is prerequisite prior to negotiations.
If that had happened, that we wouldn't have been having this conversation.
So ultimately, that's the formalization of that and making sure that we say, well, this is the formal process, and so we know it's being followed because it's not just what we would expect makes sense, but it's what we know is in policy.
Right. That inclusive process, you can get the misinterpretation of it, thinking that, well, I informed you of what this is from HR, or from the negotiators, I informed you of what we said and what we did. But that doesn't help because it's supposed to pull the other way around. And if there'd be a difference, if they're trying to negotiate and they come to an impasse and say, well, I can't get that, then they wouldn't have the freedom to go ahead and just yield that anyway. They would go back to the elected official and whoever's involved in that team and say, can we negotiate? Can we give on this? So that really defines the process of what is negotiable and what isn't.
Okay.
I have to go. I want to thank you. Yeah, I want to thank you for bringing it up and look forward to a process and new meeting to discuss this further.
We had that scheduled in 2014.
Sometime in September 2014, we'll get
before
back.
Peter leaves, I'm trying to get the WASAC letter signed by all the good calls. So this is an example.
WASAC letter on shared revenue. Doug, you had a comment on that.
I was trying
to eat my salad and you were trying to talk to me about it.
Yeah. This is more of a question I'd like to have help to have a response. And it's related to this.
Before you, do you guys all know about the shared revenue letter?
Sent it out last week.
Yeah.
Who's left to sign on it? Okay.
Everybody but the final
commissioner. Okay. And I'm willing to sign it.
Thank you.
I have this issue that in the past I've gone to the legislature requesting money, or been part of Waco that requested money. And I've had legislators tell me
because of the issue of the as we all know, we have expenses, and they are, you've heard from Glenn, it's about 4%, and we have the ability to raise our property taxes by 1% every year. And I've had comments, and I know one of them looks at the person who's had, we've had a discussion about this way in the past, and another representative Jim Dunn, say, you know, why should I work on giving you money? If you, we've given you the authority,
thanks,
the, and the voters and everybody agrees that you have up to 1% to give, increase your tax, and you don't do that, but you're coming up to the Olympia and asking for the money up there. And I don't know if you understand what I'm saying here, but it's just, how do I respond to if I go up there and or sign this and say, hey, we want the state's, this money from the state to Representative Orcutt or Representative Moeller or anybody up there that has legislators have said this in the past to me, how do I respond back to that? And that's what I'm trying to
I always respond.
How?
Thank you for giving me the local authority to enact taxes.
To cut my own throat.
We used to say thanks for enough rope to go home and hang myself with, but that's really not my job. This is a state mandate, and just up here asking for you to provide enough state money to do it. Not asking you for extra authority at the local level. Now we do, but I was pushed back really hard on that one, Mr. Treasurer. Say, why? You know,
and then most times we lose.
Representative Orca, who I used to really enjoy going around and around with, but I'm just
trying to. Because I remember having conversations, I think, with you, Tom, in your office at the
moment. Yeah, I don't remember.
I'm just, you know, taking money to help, because we're saying, hey, we need this money to meet our needs, and we're not taking what they've authorized us to.
Well, that was the clear extortion with the 911 tax, where they said, we will either take your funding if you don't take a local tax vote.
I mean, and it happened with the mental health tax, it happened with the meth tax, they did the same thing, and it will continue, and you're right, Doug, it will continue when we go talk to the legislature, they will continue to say that to us, and they have said it every time. They use it as the excuse to take money away from us because they say, well, we gave you local authority, which is exactly enough rope to hang yourself with.
Well, keep in mind that the county has a lobbyist, so any of the elected officials, if you have legislation that you'd like the county to be able to get behind or to oppose, make sure you let us know because we're regularly in touch with them.
Well, yeah, it's just, I'm up there talking to these folks, and I'm part of the county. They come back, and you know, I can't, well, yeah, the commissioners didn't fund that, but I'm asking for this money,
right.
and they see a disconnect.
Yeah, it is a reality that we are not on as solid footing to get money back. I mean, that's just the reality.
I mean, talk to the
legislature. If you haven't enacted all the local options, they're not as willing to talk to you about giving you state funds. That's just the reality of the list. You know that.
For me. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the bottom line is hypocritical. You're asking local people at a more local level to take a tax vote that they're not willing to. That was always my answer.
And do they care? Did you ever win that argument?
No, you have a different need here, and your need here is not the same as every county around the state. So I'm not quite sure what you're asking for, but I mean, you're asking, as we are in this letter here, is to compensate for the sales tax that we lose that goes across the river is for the benefit of all the departments and all the Clark County, not specifically for one department.
Well, they look at it as a revenue, you know, no matter what, sales tax, property tax, to do our job.
True. It's a good point, and it's definitely something that we will continue to face with the legislature. It's something we need to be aware of. No doubt.
How do you answer?
Unfunded mandates.
I couldn't answer you, Tom.
No one ever spoke out more about unfunded mandates than I have. So.
Yeah. All right. So, will you sign the letter now?
I just needed because
we need to set it up. Because every time I go to ledge steering for WASAC, everybody's talking about how their letter got sent, and I want to be able to say the same. So, Because they keep harassing us, saying we need all the companies to get in on it. And the budgets are going to come out later this week. The first round of budgets are going to come out later this week. The governor's budget is going to either closely follow or go closely ahead of the, I forget who's leading, Senator House. I forget which one's coming out first. But anyway, the first legislative budget should come out by tomorrow.
After you attribute to the governor, that's when we all laugh at.
We have, but remember the governor already, so Governor Gregoire put hers out, and Governor Inslee said he wasn't going to put one out initially.
Yeah.
And so he's been waiting until the last revenue forecast, and that happened. And so his is going to come out Thursday or Friday is what they're thinking. But the one of the first legislative ones is going to come too. But
I do have just two other things.
Wait, we didn't talk about one of your other, is the homeless thing?
Yeah, I think of that, and just one other thing about, so we've talked about it, sort of, we touched on it, the reconfiguration process, and I don't know, I know it's still ongoing in the process, but I just want to make sure that that the Assembly Elected Officials' responsibilities, levels of service, our contract commitments, and our roles that we have, and responsibilities we have under different statutes, and my responsibilities to my taxing district cities and the 176,000 customers that I serve, that that's part of meeting this reconfiguration, make sure that maybe reconfiguring things, but we've got our responsibilities just like you guys do. And
sure.
Else. I mean, that's plugged into that. I haven't seen where that is now, but it's still, I know you're still working through that process.
Right. Bill, Glenn, can you kind of...
I could talk. Yeah, we're going to take away all your mandates. We're going to go up the legislature and take them all away. So you won't have to worry about it anymore, Doug. Of course, we take that into consideration. We're not done. In fact, we're reconfiguring the reconfiguration process. We ran into a buzzsaw with many of your representatives, your deputies on the management team, and we're reconfiguring how we're approaching it. We still have the same goal of bending the cost curve down. We're growing at 4%. We have 2% revenue. We still have the gap. We have a big, as we go forward, we have a bigger gap. So we're retooling the process as soon as tomorrow. We actually have talked about it this morning and redoing it tomorrow. And talking to all your deputies are on the management team.
I think it's a healthy process.
Thank you, and I hope you continue to feel that way. But again, you've heard my contention. We honor the independence of the elected official. We know full well that you're going to have to accomplish your functions, and there are mandates. It's not mandated how you do it, and that's really what reconfiguration is pointing at. That hey, we got this doing this and this doing this, and you're biggest part, all elected officials are the biggest part of the general fund. So we're going to ask you to, something has to give somewhere. Where that is and what has to give and how much will have to be determined, and that will be what we're hoping to do, what we're looking at, and Glenn can correct me if I'm wrong, is basically refining and institutionalizing what you're doing already. And that is managing within the constraints of the economics of our reality.
Thanks.
So as I was thinking,
thank you.
Always adding bodies, it does relieve the pressure, but it doesn't solve the problem. I know the issue with adding one more commissioner part of the problem is the efficiency of the way that we operate as a group over there, and I don't control the whole group. So one elected official against 10 elected officials, I've been able to penetrate that, but I haven't been able to dominate it. And
that's not what I heard.
And hopefully buy it. But the reality is that when the pushback from you guys is asking if we're doing things the most efficient way, have we done this? I mean, the reality is, I've got a handful of judges that have to have that piece of paper in their hand and refuse. So I have to actually have 4 or 5 staff members process paper. Repetitively. And so the reality is that if I did away with that process,
right.
I'd solve it.
So in that reconfiguration, that's one of the things that we will ask Bill and Glenn is to help you be successful in kind of pushing toward that reconfiguration to create efficiencies and see how we can do that without actually undermining either your work or the work of the other elected officials, the judges, and other ones.
We just cut off their paper, buddy.
And you know, we've got that, not to dominate my issues, but you know, that huge warehouse over there with all of our documents.
That's a warehouse, yeah.
I occupy at least 80%, at least 70%. Oh, yeah. And you know, the reality is that if I could verify it, you know, we could have this stuff gone. You know, and it's a short-term project, but I'm no longer adding to that problem. You know, that's been the goal. It's caused conflict, and you know, with us and the judges. But the reality is, we check it first, and we're not adding to the problem. But we've got 10 years worth of stuff that sits over. I thought the biomass would take care of that.
We were going to throw it in the burner.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, you didn't speak at the hearing, man.
That's the point. I can't toss it because you know we're missing a few things here and there that we'd have to go back and look for.
Okay.
But you know, there's it's more. I think it's more unique that I'm up against 10 elected individual judges.
Sure.
And I got to say, the majority, I do have a buy-in, and the more time they spend to their needs, the ones that are moving forward, it has been successful. And, you know, we've got district court, you know, that's actually the buy-in, and, you know, we're actually, our IT and our staff is helping them, and in the long run, you know, we've got district court judges signing documents. I can't get our superior, but with peer pressure, and saying, look, we got district court judges, you know, I'll get there. But it's a slow process.
No doubt. I mean, appreciate you doing it.
Coming from private sector, you know, it's a little overwhelming how things don't move along.
It's glacial sometimes, no doubt. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know what? You know what I'm seeing here?
Yes. What do you? I don't know.
I think we ought to blow up the Wednesday morning meeting, elected officials breakfast, and we ought to have a scheduled afternoon session with our elected officials. And because I don't think we would have had the collective bargaining thing done the way it was done.
Mm-hmm.
Get the presiding judges of both branches to be here to do this. That can be done at a noontime time. And we don't have good regular attendance at those Wednesday morning things. And I would suggest we have a more regularly scheduled session at this time of the day or something.
I don't think I've ever seen Steve there.
No. Wednesday mornings, yeah, Steve doesn't show up. Wednesday
that wasn't meant for my chairman. Man.
No, it's
you're
going to
get me in trouble.
I have Tuesday meetings a lot of times, and I just don't do early morning Wednesdays after
I'm,
that.
I'm just saying we got more done today than, and with reconfiguration, we need to have you there. We need to have you there.
No, that's a good call. Yeah, that's cool. I like that. Good
idea. I have to say that, you know, coming from my previous employment, I've always been told that if there's something you can solve with inside the company, go do it. And then I've been in where other groups that they want each department or each group, you know, wants to protect their own. You know, I'm willing to share some of my resources, you know, because, you know, I can't just give them away. But, you know, we have shared resources for, you know, joint, you know, ventures. And it's, you know, the goal is at the end, it'll be a win-win.
Yep. And we're all in it for that reason, so.
Cool. All right. Everybody's done a great job for Squeeze, and they really have. Oh, yeah. In my business, I kept saying, how much more can we squeeze out of the turnip? But somehow we always did. But one of the things I want to ask is we started the lean process through the different departments. And Bill, where are we now with that?
All over the map. Marty has had his Kaizen session. Commissioner Medora came to some of those sessions in the end, and we're starting to implement a single family building permit, single family housing building permit. Mm-hmm. I believe district court's well along on some of theirs. I don't know where some of the others are. Well, probably, but it'd be a good time to kind of get a collective look.
I didn't know if we have more than one department.
Oh yeah,
working on the lean process at this.
We
time.
Do. That's a good point. I'll get a report for that.
They've come up with some great things. I was pretty impressed. I keep thinking that we squeezed everything out of it that we can, and yet we came back out with something major.
I know, you know, on our Kaizen side of the clerk's office, you know, with the association, you know, once we identify something we want to change, you know, we can invite clerks down here and make them part of it. I mean,
cool.
It's part of, you know, there's a large amount of knowledge throughout the state, and I've been trying to stop at each clerk's office.
Yeah.
And I mean, from the smallest to the biggest, each one has something unique, and my goal is to bring it back here. Yeah.
That is the best thing about our associations. We learn so much from each other and all of that, which is great. All right, homeless in the public service center.
Yeah. As you know, we've had issues.
Well, I responded to that.
The homeless.
Yeah, second floor. That's what, yeah.
And
beds, bunk beds.
And we've had some differences within the fellow elected officials about a lot of results. I just have this personal feeling that taking away the furniture doesn't eliminate the homeless. Some of them even sit on the floor. And so, I mean, I know that you guys are responsible for our wellness in Clark County and happiness and all that. I don't know how you're going to solve homelessness, but you know, we all try to work on it in our different ways. But I know that the staff has been drafting a policy, and
yes.
I've looked at that, and I think it's great. I think it's good, and it's a step to how we conduct business in this building. Because I have people who come. In fact, this morning there was probably about 9 or 10 people waiting for the doors to open. They were sitting there waiting to do business. There was also a couple homeless that come right in as soon as the doors open. And it's an area where people wait for other people to come. They don't want to be in our lobby. They're not ready to take a number and do the business. But you know, there are people who sit out there, and staff sort of enjoys being out there during the breaks to read a book. I mean, just you know, people are just.
So what's the, not to push you along, but what's the suggestion?
Well, you know, we used to have Share House had a day center, and the city, I'm blaming on the city of Vancouver, pulled a permit on RV. What's the construction company?
RSV.
Yeah, and we had it, and it was a double wide there with showers and all that, and they moved it out of there, and so. That's when we started getting the homeless problem here in the last couple of years. And I've been told that Living Hope has a ministry down there, and that they are looking at lease, or they're in the process of leasing the house next door to Share to set up a sort of a day center. Plus, they may have showers there, but I know that they're looking at doing that. I think that would help us. I think they're probably going to need some help doing this. I don't know if there is funding available or something that could help alleviate. Well, I wish the city of Vancouver would be participating in this process. But if there's some way of resolving, because there is this transient from Share House, where you see them just walking from Share House, and they either stop here. I mean, I don't blame them at all for being here. You know, if they're here, they're here because you know it's cold out there, it's rainy, but it's an issue that we have. And
so
I'm just asking the board to do something rather than pulling.
Just reaching out to Living Hope and seeing what they're up to and see if there's a way we can help.
I would rather
I don't
not
know
get
if that's who's it. Is it Living Hope, the church, Living Hope?
Yeah, the one that's on increase in there.
Yeah, yeah,
they
where the old Kmart was.
I do know yesterday in the meeting the gentleman with the ponytail.
Yeah, Jason?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I've served plenty of meals for him over a chair.
Yeah.
And great guy to talk to. But,
no doubt.
I think that they come over here and hang out.
We have an obligation to provide a working environment for our employees. It's required in most of the collective bargaining agreements, and I certainly believe that that's the right thing to do. I'm sure you do, too. We have these people shooting up drugs in front of our employees, and that's not acceptable to me. I have a policy being drafted, being looked at by the prosecutor to see what our authority is. If we're a public building, we have certain limitations. We can things we can and cannot do.
Okay.
And that's being vetted right now.
So we'll get the policy draft to all of the elected officials who obviously have employees that will be impacted by it before it's finalized, and then we'll also reach out to Living Hope and see what what they're doing, if there's a way we can help.
Between the county, the city, there needs to be something to deal with the homeless folks. It's just between here and the church and the library. And,
yep.
Great. You know, kick them out of the city hall because they have papers.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, same with the metal detectors. You know, we solve a lot of those issues.
Yeah. I get the idea of like making them more closed off public service center. I mean, it is the public's building, but anyway, Greg.
I just want to really commend the commissioners for thinking about taking some general fund monies that are available and directing it to the problem of homeless in our community.
We got extra money?
Well, I'm assuming, well, I'm not, I mean, the county already does some stuff for homeless.
True.
Through DCS, yes. We provide yes. Through grant sources. But if there's additional revenues that are available from the general fund that you guys in your prioritization want to give to the community for help with the problem of homeless, that's great.
Well, and certainly from my perspective, we at least the reaching out that we would do right now would be just to see what they're doing, if there's a way that we can help, but that wouldn't be financial. If financial considerations from my standpoint have to go through the budget prioritization process.
Well, I would add, yes, that if there is an interest by the board to invest in the homeless problem, that be taken into the fuller budget context.
Yeah.
I think we need another partner here, and I don't know what part Vancouver plays. But I saw in the warrants that we signed last week, there's for share $125,000. So,
we have contract
partners that we need to see if they're playing a part. And we're carrying the water on the health department for the city, too. So I think there's somewhere along the way that we can't be expected to pick up everything or provide a place for them to come during the daytime.
I'll link arms
on
that one, Tom. Let's go.
All right. I hate to cut this off, but we actually, it's 4 o'clock, and we have a couple minutes worth of board work that we have to do before we adjourn. We'll get follow-up information on that, and we'll start setting up a meeting, a regular meeting on an afternoon so that we can all get together and talk about these things.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, all y'all, for coming out for that.
And you stay from board meeting.
It's been great, but I'll move on.
Thanks, Doug. Appreciate it, man. I'll see you tomorrow.
I'm not sure if they've got it.
All right, so... So we literally, what I told Bill
we get
I told him to jettison any of the items that he had on the board time agenda that couldn't wait until next week. And so what I would ask is if there is something that has to be discussed this week that either of you have or that I have. I know Bill had just work sessions, and that's all he had to do this week. But if there's things we have to do, they got with it. But
thank you.
Thanks, John.
Quick update on RSM. I met with County Longchin.
What'd you do this time?
Just a few days ago, and things are moving along nicely. She is getting some very welcomed help from our own Bill Barron as well as David Kelly. So Jim Eisner is very optimistic, and I think we're going to get together very well. We got off kind of a rocky start with this new organization, all of us being new, but we're all on the same page now. Very supportive. I've discovered also that all three of us sit on the same slide board and work together very well there also. So basically, everybody was new in this, and Connie also being new, she's the tutoring that's coming from, especially from David Kelly, helping her to know how to put together the agendas, how to be able to really have effective governing board meetings is going a long way. We didn't really have any metrics of any sort. There is no financial impacts tied to any of the action items. All of that's being solved now. So we all look forward to the next governing board meeting.
So things have been kind of frozen for a while as you guys got all your feet set. When do you expect that things will unfreeze?
Well, actually, no, they haven't been frozen.
As far as from the organizational structure and hiring, they have been. So when is that?
We gave that green light several meetings back.
What
green
light?
They filled all 51 positions. Or they gave the green light to all 51 positions.
So all the positions that had been tabled have now been moved forward with?
The only exception is the government liaison. That was the 52nd position. But all the 51 were filled at the second government.
And what's the expectation on that position then?
It's been tabled every time by Chris Brom. He's in, so we're going to bring it up We have, there hasn't been any discussion on it since.
Has there been any movement on it, or to figure it out as to, because I mean, at some point you either got to,
what we're doing is Dale Jarvis is going to be, he's accepted the his role to do an expanded role that he was already contracted with, and you work with the setting of the rates for the contractor. And he's very interested in, and with the council of Bill Barron, and actually buying for everybody involved on this. He's going to be also taking a look at the org chart, all of the roles and the job descriptions of everybody involved there, and give us feedback, and just make sure that everybody's equipped. It's kind of a performance evaluation assessment kind of thing, to make sure that we're all equipped to be off on the right foot.
And when do you expect to have that done so that, again, that you can either fish or cut bait with that position?
Bill, do you remember what time frame that was?
Dale Jarvis?
Mm-hmm. I think he's going to start...
June, because he had a death. His mother died. Yeah. And he had his schedule to carry him through May. He thought he could start in June, I believe. I think that's right.
That he could start in June?
Okay. But yeah, it would be a very quick thing because he sees this as an initial engagement.
Yeah. You want to give any update on this? Yeah.
Well, that's you basically covered it all. Connie, I think, is basically back on a within the love envelope of Commissioner Bedore, so that's going better. And
We're friends.
She is getting David and I are helping her with some basic pointers, and we'll continue that meeting. We're meeting this week or next week. To do some more stuff. Dale Jarvis, as I say, he was supposed to be here sooner, but his schedule with the death in his family moves out. His mother passed away. So I believe end of May, early part of June, and he didn't see a long time engagement to do the initial work the commissioners on that board had asked for.
So we're healthy. Nothing's on hold except that 152nd position. There's not been anything denied. We're all on the same page.
A lot of learning advice. I think it's my major concern that Commissioner Medora and I have talked this on the edge about with Vanessa is that we have huge learning curve coming up before January 1 of 14 with the new Medical Care Act and what the impact's going to be on those services.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
We got the new Apple, did I say it? Was it? The Washington Apple Health is the new name of, it's not Medicare anymore. Not Medicaid anymore. Washington Apple Health.
Yeah. It's the enhanced or the expanded Medicaid.
It's going to be a good learning curve.
Okay, good. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I've got a couple of things, and I know that we're short on time. Just a quickie thing. Had a conversation with Marty about the streamlining of the permits. And the one program that they have where they sell 10 permits... Yeah, the shot for like $66.
The ticket, book, yeah.
That's working really well, but they've been only doing it for like one category. And the thing that kind of triggered the opening for other categories is I got a call from a roofing company. Mm-hmm. That they've been going through it one by one, a hard time going out, waiting 2 hours, getting a permit, paying a bunch of money. And Marty thinks, well, why don't we extend that to those other categories as well? That same process has really been just a home run.
Do you want to bring that up to us with the ideas of which ones you can expand it to?
That would be a good idea.
We get there, we always go stale.
Yeah.
But Mark, bring back.
Yeah. Well, he tested the water to make sure it was right for that one. It's working well, so expanding.
He hasn't had any rejects on it. Yeah, very, very successful. So, Bill, do you want to make that an action item? Great. Okay. Let's see here. I plan to continue to attend every governing board meeting that I sit on. I have a couple of positions that I got Kelly Sills is the backup, and I already checked with Axel. I think it's like two or three positions that he will need to be the backup.
Is he already the alternate, or do we need to make him that officially?
We need to make him that.
Okay. So whatever those two are, then... let's bring that back to the board to update the alternates list on there so people know.
Yep.
Don't worry about it. We'll get it updated.
Okay, great. Okay.
That's good, by the way. I'm glad you're doing that. You're recognizing that you have to prioritize your time and that, you know, you can't be at everything at all times. And I appreciate that.
Okay.
That
you're doing that too. Okay. I don't know if you had any conversation last week regarding the Facebook pages being linked.
No, we waited because you weren't here, and we don't have the full analysis back. Mary's here, but there's... I can tell you briefly, having looked at your Facebook page, first of all, it's a campaign website, so you can't link to it because it's illegal, because it's a political website. It's the one you use for your campaign, so you can't do that, first of all. Second of all, there are strict limitations on what you can and can't do with regards to political statements, either to or fro, that would have to be limited if we were linking from the public's site on all of this. And then there's also the archiving of every document, like Lori Volkman mentioned. So my request would be that we bring it back and have Lori here, because Lori's the one who trained us up on what we had to do legally to have it be publicly accessed.
Actually, my campaign website was a website, is davemedora.com.
Well, it looks like the header, I mean, I didn't spend a lot of time, but it looked like the header was, you know, your campaign slogan.
You got a good point. What time did I change it?
It's just things like that that make it that. And so, and they can, between Lori and Mary, they can give us all that. But but my request would be is to have both of them come back and talk to us about that.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I'd like to make sure that we add to our agenda, that somehow we focus on adding to the fast track business development properties. I see it's an intention, it's a desire.
That's
a
project.
Doing it.
I thought it's a project.
It's on a project list.
What are we doing?
Do we have a work session? Bill will find out.
In your spare time.
It is a project. We'll find out when we're going to have a work session on, because there are tools that we can employ. And so, yes.
It's a hot one.
It is. Okay. I'd like to be dealing with things like that. That'd be fun. That'd be good.
We're being driven one way or the other by the world.
There's things we can agree, but there are some little things we can do.
We'll try the world.
All right.
Okay. I'd like people to ask that, and hear me out here, because you might think, no, do that. I'd like to ask many, and not necessarily all, maybe, of the departments to provide a what if. What if we were to ask you to cut back on your budget, two scenarios. One, 3.5% less spending, and 7% less spending on the general fund. And the idea behind that, the goal behind, the intent behind that, is not to have an across-the-board cut or anything like that. It's instead an exercise to identify line items that would help us to identify what would they do if they, and the requirement would be, you still need to comply. You still need to accomplish what needs to be accomplished. We don't direct how to do it, and we don't direct how much to spend to do it. So those things are really up to each department and up to each elected official. But to have them pass back to us the specific line items, and we can ask the question, what can we, as commissioners, do? What would we do even temporarily that would help you be able to eliminate the costs of those individual line items? And likely, we'll get some benefits that way. It may be 0.5%, we don't know. But it will be one way of having, really getting that insight, the fresh look that each department head can provide to us to help us to take away costs from one area so that we can remove these fees that are killing businesses. We got to trade one for the other.
So there's, in the grand scheme of, there's no such thing as a new idea. We did that. We've done it once. When was the last time? 08? 09?
We're still
still doing that in the reorganization.
We are, but that's the second part. The first one we did, and I don't remember, was it 07, 08, or was it 09, 10? Which budget did we do it for? In 8.
We cut in 9.
No, I know we cut then, but one of those years we asked specifically for that. We said,
5%.
Give us a 5% cut scenario and what you would have to cut.
That was the
08. That was the 08 one. So that was before either. And it was a good exercise. It is a good exercise. And I agree, as part of the budgeting process, it is a good exercise. Doing it outside of the budget process, it becomes more haphazard. You end up doing things in a vacuum without seeing how they address and or affect the entire budget. So as part of the budget process, I think it's a great idea. Well, we have our supplemental that happens at the end of this year, but our next full budget, biennial budget, and we do biennial budgets because they're more stable that way, and we actually...
Summer of 14.
Yeah, so it'd be next year. And so it'd be at the beginning of next year is when we would ask them, or by the end of this year, we'd ask them, we'd say, this is the beginning of the budget process. Give us two scenarios. And what would you cut?
Can I add a little bit to what we've been doing on that?
Well, that's the second part of his reconfiguration, which is going outside of, is happening outside of the budget process, which you just
and
mentioned.
And
the
lean project,
which is also looking at right now.
I think we might have our plate full right now. Maybe we should address it during the supplemental budget time.
That would be my suggestion. Is it's a great idea to do, but with lean and with reconfiguration already underway during the interim time period to get ready for the next budget period, we're going to have a lot to be able to help us between those two things and between and actually saying what how would you cut that will help us on the budget.
I think that the scenario I compare it with right now with our schools doing all these different types of testing with the SAT test and the other tests and the new test now. And it seems like all we do in school is test. And so in this same scenario, I'm afraid that we're overburdening our department heads with doing the same thing over and over again. We have reorg going on. We have the lean process going on.
Well, reconfiguration is the overall, and lean fits into that.
I think we're doing the same thing.
Well, it is all tied together. It is related.
Yes.
And since you went through this in the past, I expect that you came up with some benefits from it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we cut $62 million.
Yeah.
Actually cut.
And we were able to do it in a way, like you said, if we didn't do a flat across the board, what we were able to figure out is, all right, if you make that 5% cut in some departments, you're into the marrow. You're not just into the bone. In other areas, you can cut the 5% and not hurt as bad.
Okay,
so it was good.
Let me back off on a little bit then, because what I don't want to do is add a substantial burden to what's already going on. But what I'd like to do is say, I'm going to ask for 1%. Because that's more doable, and it's really in addition to whatever is already on there. Because if we wait for 2 years to underspend the budget,
we're not waiting.
We're not.
And we're not waiting. I mean, we've got reconfiguration, which is saving money in the interim. We have the lean processes that are saving are making efficiencies that save money and time in the interim. So we're already doing things that will save money. The exercise you're talking about is a great one to figure out what the priorities of cuts or of savings might be. But for the purposes of just doing another exercise, I mean, we've got enough exercises going on with our staff who's already feeling a little discombobulated with all the change. So throwing another test at them right now, to me at least, is first of all out of cycle. Second of all, it's just like another straw to break the camel's back.
If I may validate his statement, Commissioner, you heard me say just a minute ago about how we've had to reconfiguration. Mm-hmm. One of the main reasons is a significant pushback from the management team, including the elected officials' representatives. One of the things we were going to do is have them give us cut scenarios as part of reconfiguration. And they vehemently push back on that and say, why? Because there's still not a significant understanding of the problem. So when you have an organization as large as this, when you have so many people with so many different missions and so many different perspectives, one of the things that Glenn and Jim and I and Marlia are trying to do, and Mark Gassaway is now on our side, the director of finance finally agrees that there's something wrong. The deputy treasurer finally said, yeah, We believe in the problem statement, is convincing people that we do have a problem in the out years. So the cut scenarios were the first thing that we took out of reconfiguration with one of our tools because of the pushback. Well, you have to understand the trauma that we went through in 9. People don't want to cut again, Commissioner. They don't want to lay off people again. And reconfiguration, one of the goals is to get where we want to be, to get those lines together without cutting people. And we think we can do that. But just wait for mid-May.
Can I add just a little bit?
Yeah.
Just be aware, Commissioner Minora, you can probably happy to do this. Even though we had to back away from saying we want cut scenarios, we had to back away from, there was this initial burst of energy around, oh, more cut scenarios. And there's all sorts of problems with cut scenarios, but we probably have to do them anyway. So we're all set up. We're all set up for looking at cut scenarios in the budget cycle as we approach it, according to Commissioner Stewart's calendar, which is correct. So even in the middle of the biennium, we're going to be able to do that. And the way we've done it is we've talked to the departments and we said, look, even if you, well, first of all, you'll also be happy to hear this, we showed them, increased revenues doesn't fix the problem. And even if you cut your budgets, they'll keep them totally flat, which is effectively a cut. We're still in a problem, and you've seen that on the contract. You dip down into the second bank and then you come back up. So they've already heard flat. That's a cut. They're already set up to do cuts. The workforce plans that Bill's been talking to you about are the vehicle to deliver that back to you. So I think you're going to have all that.
Well, I guess what I would need to do is work more, get more up to speed, because I haven't seen the specifics. I really don't know the plan very well, and to the limited exposure I have had, when it comes to just simply not filling vacancies, it's really not a real good planning.
That's off the table, too.
Totally agree.
So we have you on the calendar to brief you on the budget. You asked for a specific program by program briefing. We've done that. We've got it ready to brief you.
Cool. And then reconfiguration, we have our next work session in May. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
So we'll have an individual brief, and then we'll have, by mid-May, we'll have a better idea of what is the strategy, what is the, you know, kind of the plan, and how can we, you know.
The work we're doing right now is to ensure we have elected official staff. We've got to work harder and try to get more people on board before we bring some.
Keep in mind that the not only am I motivated to be informed of it, but I really want to participate if there's some way that another pair of eyes can help to solve some more of those problems.
Absolutely.
Work a little smarter. I like to participate in that process.
We work for you, Commissioner. We work for you.
Of course, and I think the individual briefing and the work sessions, they're not going to come to us with answers. They're going to come to us with, this is where we're at. Where do you think we should go? And so it's our opportunity, and certainly, you know, to get into it, you know, because you definitely bring an experience that will help us in this.
Okay, last one is
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
All right, we're good.
No, just you should come talk to Tim and I. We're doing this whole thing internally, and there's a lot of planning
stuff. Okay.
And I think the supplemental budget is going to be the tip of the iceberg as we approach our bow wave on our unsustainable budget.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by December, we're going to be looking at it, because it'll be 1 year out.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to make that adjustment before the end of the following December and have something put together. And hopefully, and I think all these are good things. But I don't want to do too many things at one time. One thing at a step, and they can't help but feel double
on. Okay. Last one has to do with the development, and actually the laying the foundation for job creation parcels. One of the things that the CRDC said they were interested to do, and part of what they were going to do with that money that we were going to give them would be to hire somebody that would go kind of prepare the shovel-ready parcels, or try to get them at least to the point where they can present to the county what could be made shovel-ready. And what I'd like them to do is do that. See what can we prepare, what can we do to fast-track that? And it's closer to the one that say we got already in the project. It's related also to the railroad coordinator. The railroad coordinator only makes sense to the degree that it will develop business employment along that corridor.
Agreed.
The way it's not going to be, I mean, you have the gold-plated railroad with the best track and shiny and the max out. You're never going to make any substantial money with cars going up and down it. It's going to be a drop in the bucket. What's going to make a difference is if there's businesses along that corridor that now they've enabled to form because that infrastructure makes sense for them.
So the rail is part of that infrastructure, right? I mean, because you got to do both.
You got to do both.
Exactly.
But I don't see anything happening on the land part of it. If we can work on the railroad but not on the land, it doesn't cut it. You don't get return on investment.
We agree.
We are working on rezoning.
Yes. Yeah, there are a couple things going on, but that goes to, and that goes to the, what are we doing to get, what can we do to get land jobs ready? Agreed. Yeah. Totally agree.
The railroad coordinator, I guess, you want an update? I've got an update on that.
We'll grab it off the bid.
Okay.
Well, before we get off our bid, I would suggest that we actually interview with them, especially if the two individuals who maybe want to consider you as a consultant, to ask them. Those two individuals in particular, you already know the situation here. If you were to come on board, or if you were to serve as a consultant, what would you do? Specifically, what would you do? How can we move this forward so that we end up having a return on the investment on you, on our investment in you? Well, that needs to be a conversation before we consider hiring them. They need to bring a vision to us.
So I agree with that, and just to kind of broaden it just a little bit, the Railroad Advisory Board certainly has opinions on that we might want to, on a relatively quick turn, because I agree we need to get someone to help do this job development. They would be a good group to ask because they have specific experience, and then the other person would be our operator, Eric Temple, is that he has, that's his livelihood, is whether businesses develop along that rail, so he certainly has specific perspectives on that, as well as what we could be doing, or what would you want, would he want? So that's another person to ask.
Right, so we really need to have a very specific plan. Mm-hmm. There needs to be tasks that they're going to do that's going to actually end up with return on investment. I understand that, one of those functions that they can get grants in order to upgrade the railroad, but that's going to be making us a nice shiny railroad. It doesn't do anything unless we develop the land along with it, to get return on investment for the corridor itself. So that's what I'm interested in, because rather than focus on getting somebody in here, really we need to ask the question, what would you do if you were here? That question needs to ask before we offer someone a job.
Okay. Good.
So I am to recruit for the position, though.
Is that what you're saying?
First of all, I'm not quite sure if you want to develop the whole scenario for this. I'm not sure if you want to go back and redefine the job or have the person you hire. I see the needs to be broader than that. I see that it's economic development, real estate enhancement, grant writing, and when you have a spare time, you go out and work on the Discovery Corridor. That's part of economic development. So I see it as a broader job and not so narrow as that. And I think we have to think broader, because it all takes so much time, it's so slow, and we can't do anything until we identify it, put it into a comprehensive plan, and submit it to the state, and where we're going to allow it.
So I
think that we need to get started on this.
So can I suggest that, I agree in that we can't, you're not going to develop the entire scenario and the entire, all the strategies within a job description, though, right? I mean, the job description isn't going to be the answer to the question. It's going to be the criteria for the person that you select that will help us to solve these issues. But at the very least, it makes perfect sense to get input from the people who have the job, and a couple others into, do we have the right job description to get the right person to help us to answer these questions, whether they be narrow or broad? But
can we
at least do that to get moving on it?
We can do that. I think what's happened is that they have priced themselves out of the job.
That's which is fine for those two. It's just more. I think Commissioner Madore is simply saying, well, can we ask them, like, you know, what do you think the job should be doing?
It's a proposal.
Yeah, yeah. As far as, and it's not for them necessarily, just for like, what would we be seeking? Is that fair to say? Or are you actually looking for them to propose?
Yeah, those
their
two
own
individuals. Point? Well, those two individuals already are unique in that they've already been here, they already have experience, and they should be able to come back with a proposal that would envision what they can do. They would inform us better than we could envision ourselves because they've already been serving in that position in the past. And have them give us a vision that would be specific enough so we can evaluate the return on the investment.
So, and I guess, all right, I misheard then, because we already, one of them wants to be a consultant and not an employee, and we already, I thought, it decided that we need an FTE.
We want to charge these.
Right, and we have one of them that priced himself out of being an FTE.
Yeah.
So then the question, I mean, so these two, from my standpoint, because they're not fulfilling the basic criteria that we set, aren't going to be on the table, but they also do offer a specific, very unique perspective that would be helpful in getting the right person. I mean, but we got to recruit to get that right person.
Well,
that can be part of the recruitment process.
It's a couple of steps. The first one is that we cannot even know, answer the question, are they pricing themselves out of a job? Because we don't know what the return on investment that even they envision. If they are qualified and they bring a vision and they can say, well, if you bring me on board as a consultant or as an employee, here's what I can do, and this is really the kind of return that you can expect, and we have to be able to evaluate, well, compare that to what it costs. Well, that's you're not breaking even, or well, that's 10 times what we thought it was going to cost.
Come on, man, we're public sector. You've gone off about nonprofit salaries, and you've gone off about it. People don't come into the public sector and say, well, their ROI, my ROI is two times $150,000 salary, so you should just pay me that. That's not how it works. I mean, you would never support that. I mean, and if you support it, you get crushed from the people who are your base. So there has to be a range that's set on comparables and that's actually set within a framework of what's reasonable and not what someone says they're worth. I mean,
and you misunderstand me. I'm not saying tell me how much return on investment in some general way.
That you're asking for a proposal that.
What I'm saying is bring a proposal, a plan. What would you do if, okay, you're turned loose, you've got a lot of autonomy here, go do something that's worthwhile for the county, what would you do? And how much is that really, we can evaluate, how much is that really going to do to accomplish our goals? Are we going to bring job, are we going to help solve our jobs?
These two people that we had were great. I mean, John and Fred, great. They are not the only people that can actually do the job that we want. There are lots of people out there that could do the job that we need to have done, and so just going through another round, you know, and having proposals by these two people, it's like, you know, I got to implore, like, if Fred's, you know, because we had already given the go ahead to say, hey, can we get him in? If that hasn't worked, man, we got to go out and recruit and get somebody good. Make sure the job description is what we want, but find the best person. Let the process work itself through so that we can actually find that best person. And if it's one of those guys, great. But if it's not, that's great too. At least we get someone on board because we got to get moving on this.
We've
got to
have a basic description of job, and during the interview process, and don't we can ask good questions, because someone walking in here and they have a basic description of the job won't know what you want anyway. So you have to give them some direction to go. And when they come in for the interview, you ask them, what ideas do you have? And you look at the railroad.
That would be a, right there is what you can do in the recruitment. We take them to the railroad, give them a tour. Part of the recruitment process is write as you have 24 hours. We'll see you tomorrow. Write a business plan for what you would do at the railroad.
And then they write their proposal.
I've had it. Yeah. We've done that before in other jobs.
And we wouldn't just get those two. We'd get a whole bunch of them coming
simply
in with proposals.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, I'm open to that. But in order for that to work, we need a very clear vision and purpose ourselves. As to why we define the job description, right?
The job description is already made, and it has a range of salary that is with the marketplace.
Okay, so let's do this. How about this? Between now and next week, we have the job. We have a draft job description.
No, we have a job description that two people have filled.
we have a draft job description because we haven't signed, and that you please get to the three of us by next week if there are changes to that job description that we would like to see. If we're not saying the right things on that, and then lock it down.
You have a copy of that.
I haven't seen it.
I have a copy of it, and I made a copy of it.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and so that's our starting point.
Well, yes, it is a starting point. A job description is a foundation.
Exactly.
And we need that,
agreed.
Of course. What I'm encouraging us to do is to put a little more flesh on that bone. And that is for us to be able to not only consider a job description, but consider the specific tasks and what those tasks would mean to our local economy.
Well, so, and you mentioned the land, getting it ready.
Yeah.
You can't go into the specific tasks of what that means, because some of what you would suggest will be illegal. Some of what I would suggest is impractical. So developing the tasks associated with implementing the goals that we set are something that have to be developed by the person who's coming into the job. We set their direction to say, we want you to get this land as ready as possible within the framework of the law for the jobs to come, because we know that just doing the rail alone isn't enough. We've got to get the land ready as well. That we can do. We can say that. We just said it. But saying, here are the specific tasks that you will do to do that, that's going to take longer to develop because there are a lot of complexities associated with that. So my request would be that we set that direction that you had mentioned, that you had talked about that we got to get that land ready. And I agree totally with that. We need to do more to be able to do that side of it, to get it ready so that people are coming. But the specifics within that we're going to have to develop. And it's not something that you're going to be able to put in a job description or that you're going to be able to set as a task list before someone comes on.
It ties together not only railroad expertise, but really planning, mm-hmm. zoning, land use, permitting, identifying the potential parcels that would lend themselves to this corridor. We don't have any of that. And that would be the ingredients that we got to pull together so that we can, I feel like what we have right now is expectations and generalities, and we don't really have the specifics enough to be able to know, is this smart enough for us to be able to accomplish what we think we're going to accomplish?
So
I think it needs to be a broader definition. And when you talk about that, zoning, real estate, railroad, I think comes to a smaller part other than identifying people who need real estate for their business. Railroad itself is run by our contractor, so we just have to identify the people that would use it and help with the zoning and prepare it. And do the grant writing, give more money to us to improve it. That alone is a huge, huge umbrella to be under.
Right, because we do have expertise in a lot of those areas that you mentioned. It's just not the same person. I mean, we have our entire community development department. They do zoning. That's their job. I mean, we have environmental services, then environmental permitting that is also part of this that we need to be helping on. We have transportation through public works that can help us with things that will help get these things ready. I mean, there is help to be found. You have to have someone that knows where to find the help. I mean, that they need to know enough about those issues that they know where to go and how to get fixed.
Right, and those tasks also inform the job description.
So yes. I think right now, you have a copy of that job description.
Actually,
you take a look at it and see if you want to add to it.
Yes, between now and next Wednesday.
Or remove something from it. Oh, okay.
We will all do our homework and we will come back next Wednesday and finalize this. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah,
we bring all that we can. Yes. Wednesday, hopefully, we can get enough there. Great.
To solidify.
And we'll make sure that that's on the agenda for next week
for a board meeting. Yeah, I think it's very important
that we get it started. Yeah, and all three of us are recognizing the importance of getting going on this.
We're four months.
People keep asking for extra weeks, man.
And
now I'm feeling it.
Okay.
All right, so that was the last thing that you had done, David, that you needed to discuss today, or?
Well, the last thing is
that was the last.
That's what he said. I know. I heard him. It's on the tape. Yeah.
Anna is a big help in my office, but she's sitting there in a round table, a little chair, and I've got my little printer there. She's not tied into the network, and she can't get to my Outlook. And it would be, she really needs a real desk there, and she really needs to have a PC that's wired in so that she can get to Outlook. And so that's, I just want to see if that's okay with you guys.
Now you're wanting to use public resources for your private employee. That's the question, is what is the public's benefit associated with that?
Absolutely, I see that.
When somebody's going to ask me, they're going to say, okay, so that we as the public just paid for a desk and a computer for a private employee, so what's the, where's the line drawn? So that's, I'm just trying to draw that out. What's the public benefit?
Second vote,
what's the public benefit associated with it? And I might give you a third, but you got
to... I think that the public has a lot to benefit. I know that David's overworking me because he's got two in his office. I only got me. So I think that we probably have all the extra furniture right there in that little closet around the corner. I sure don't have a problem.
I'd be a lot happier too because right now she's using Wi-Fi with her own personal laptop.
Okay. There, in the document that you signed and that Anna signed, there were clear definitions of what's public information and what the limitations are and all of that. So my, you know, if that's moving forward too, my request is obviously if you're going to be tied
to
it, Anna's going to be...
No problem.
Perfect. That's what I need to make
I'll
sure.
I'll check the policy. There are policies that apply to this.
Yeah, please do check the policies.
You know, I think I see it as a free employee.
I don't.
That's it.
There's nothing free about it. He's paying her, and we're having to, and the public's buying her resources to use. There's nothing free.
So I that's true. I'm using my term now.
No, I'm sorry.
I think we're going to benefit more than we're giving
up. Okay.
Is that a second
vote? He already gave it to you, but Bill's going to check the policies. Bill's going to check the policies on that. So, so that we're all compliant.
We already covered that.
I don't know. Bill's going to check the policies. As long as it's compliance with that fine.
I will ensure you that it will be compliant.
You don't even know what he's going to bring back as the policies.
I know exactly what's happening. It's a very well-written Bronson.
Just when you start getting hooked into the network, that's the...
Well, I can tell you, that's what IT wants.
I believe that. I totally believe that.
Okay, my turn.
Yes.
You got it.
David,
440. All right.
I'd like to move forward with our thinking on putting the fairground on the same budget as Parks and Recreation. Now, what we do today in the fairground is we dip into our general fund and we get some adjustment from our REIT tax and we pay good debt services as we did the golf course. In fact, even maybe. The golf course should be included in this also. Because it's an entertainment forum that's part of Clark County. And whether it's a park or a fairground or a golf course, it's part of Clark County. And they actually make money and the parks don't. I'd like to see if we don't, maybe we can't put that underneath there because we have park tax on our property tax. But I'd like to have it inclusive, maybe as part of it, so it'd be like one department.
Have you brought that up at Fair Board?
No.
Because you're our rep on that, right?
Yeah.
Can you bring it up to them and see? Because they may have... reasons,
you know,
why
I
have separate.
I have loosely, but not formally, and they said it should be remove a burden from them of being under the gun all the time. I know they work hard all the time, and the only thing that we're short of is payment for the exhibit hall, and I'm going to move the main society in there anyway. So, Bill's not paying attention.
That's no fun.
So I wanted to look at more seriously if that can be done.
My request would be to talk to the Fair Board and see if there were any sort of limitations associated with that, and budget may have some.
I just have a question. Are you saying you're proposing moving the fair into the general fund?
What do you say?
I'm proposing
as a loser.
Designating that REIT tax that we put into the general
fund. There's a reason there's a fair fund, and I don't know the legal or logistical reasons why there's a fair fund. But
and it could be like a fair fund, golf course fund, park fund.
I don't know.
A pot of money that we use for Clark County Recreation.
Can we get more?
I don't know if we can do that.
Can we get information on what that might look like?
Well, that's kind of what I'm asking. That we would ask some of our staff to see what we can do. We probably have to go to Jim, a financier, or somebody to say, financially, can that be done? Yeah. Is there a way to meet the requirements and still have it there? So it's not after every year begging for $100,000.
Yes, I would, when it comes to the Tri-Mountain Golf Course, I would keep that separate because that is it's a very different category than the fair, a very different category than parks. It is losing money every year, and really have the obviousness of that should be staying before our eyes, because we should not be in the business of just simply providing a commercial business that loses money every year. Somehow we need to be able to fix that problem. I don't want to bury it in a bigger,
I'm just saying, that's $5 million upside down. If you sold it today, we would have to pay off. We'd have to come up with $5 million to pay off the deficits. That's even we don't have it. We can't afford
it. It's a separate project we need to address.
What was the question?
I agree. And I
didn't hear.
It's been argued.
Let me back. I'm looking for a way to permanently fund the fairground.
And bring it in within the general fund.
And bring it within the general fund.
Okay, we'll look at that.
Consider maybe along with parks in that fashion. I mentioned the golf course because it's one of those things we fund year after year after year. When a form of recreation, it brings in revenue, the fair brings in revenue, the parks have a park tax. I guess we're going to have a fair tax, or we have a golf course tax, but we don't.
We have fees for those.
We have fees, okay.
Well, I mean, you pay to golf there, and you pay to go to the fair, and use the facilities and all that.
We'll do it. Come back to it.
Well, it's only if you go golfing.
Okay. So anyway, I just want to know.
Got you, Simon.
So for the fairgrounds, I'm cool with that and looking at that. For Tri-Mountain, I don't know. I wouldn't do that, man. Because Tri-Mountain, Betty Sue used to always try to make the argument to me that Tri-Mountain's like a park. And I always used to say, no, it's not, because you literally can't go walking around it unless you actually paid the fee to go golfing because of liability issues. Like, you can't even have your kid, you know, someone there that doesn't have golf clubs with them. So it's not, in the traditional sense, it's a pay-to-play fee-for-service.
I can't walk in the fairground either.
But that's kind of why I'd like to see that still separate. But I mean, at least looking into it makes sense to me on those.
Because every time it comes up every year, we have a newspaper sitting here.
I don't know.
You lost money again, and they beat us up for a week on it.
So on the fairgrounds, you got your votes to at least look at.
Just look at it. I just want to know.
All right, cool.
I don't know if you can do that.
What else you got?
It's a thought. Bench court. I know that Doug Z has been in to talk to you. I got kind of blindsided yesterday at the executive board meeting. Hmm. Was a Vets Court thing.
By Judge Z or by someone else?
Judge Z, kind of.
Okay.
They were, of course, looking for funding for it, and he named off the Drug and Alcohol Tax, the Veterans Relief Fund, and the Mental Health Fund. And before I told him, I said, no, these things are all maxed out, or you can never ever die from God. And he seemed to think that we just create another tax or fee or something like that.
Well, that we could?
So, yeah, we could or would or something like that.
So,
I guess where I'm going with this is a couple twofold. One, there was a possibility of some legislation having to do with the Veterans Relief Fund that was separated from our tax limit. You know what I'm talking about?
That's pretty technical. That gets into how they calculate the levy for the veterans.
Yeah.
Right now it's outside the 1% and can get pretty rich.
And what I'm saying, I thought it was inside that 1%.
And there was legislation to clarify that it's outside the
1%. Outside.
Let's find it. Axel, can you find out for us?
So I'm not sure if that went through.
Thank you.
And the we'll thought out. Was maybe there's a possibility that the outside
right.
we could increase. And we're way under. We're only half of what we can legally implement there.
For the veterans
relief fund. That maybe we're looking, I think he's looking.
Well, why do you need legislation? Because you can double what you got.
You can do it now.
You can do it now.
I have to in property tax.
Yeah.
Well, it's going
to
be. It's
that's what he's asking for. He wants you to increase the levy amount for that. But
yeah, but they wanted to separate it from where it is. So
it would stand by itself, which would be even itself. More, which would be even more tough for you.
Did you?
Yeah, I've been. Josie counts me as a founding member, although I've only attended one meeting on that.
So now you're in a position of giving money.
So I am very supportive of that whole intent of what they're trying to solve there. But this brings into the bigger question of the practicality, usefulness, the fruitfulness of the specialty courts. They're somehow, we don't have it quite right yet. And we need to be able to address that, have a workshop on it, or do some homework behind the scenes, and see how can we tie that in. With mental health services, with the Vanessa Gassens, that whole part, we need to somehow address that to ensure that we accomplish what the judges really want to accomplish in a more effective way. Because the number of graduates out of that program are very, very, very few. And although their hearts are very big, the judges are. So rather than just say, let's fund that more, I think we better ask the question, is this the smartest way to do it?
That's good. I mean, they'll give you all kinds of information about jail days that have been saved by those programs and all of that. And I'm sure they'll give you all of that.
Two things. One, I told Judge Zimmerman exactly what he needs to do in anticipation of the grant running out in mid-14. He's to submit a decision package to the budget office during the readopt for the Board of Commissioners to consider bringing it into the inventory.
Right.
Very simple. First thing he does is then he runs to you because he doesn't like that answer. The second thing is we're bringing to you in the very near future a request to do an analysis of all of the specialty courts, and we'll add Veterans
Good.
Court to it
Good.
By Washington State University Spokane,
cool.
which have done this before. Now, there's some consternation among the folks who work for the judges who say, we don't need that because it's good, it's good, it's good, it's good.
Good. Good.
But the Board of Commissioners the board, are funding those. And for us to be spending a significant amount of money out of the meth tax without some kind of evaluation is foolhardy and not good, competent policymaking. So we're going to be bringing that to you. We just had a meeting with all the judges folks yesterday. So,
along that line, is there a possibility
what?
Of getting funding per client? What I'm saying.
But whatever source of funding, that's part of the budget process, right. Commissioner, that you set up to do.
You said that I thought there were several people served by it. You indicated there's just only a couple.
Right.
If there's only a couple, then we're really overfunding it.
Well, yes, we are. That's one of the arguments, that we are spending too much money on specialty courts to get them to treatment when you can just put them in treatment.
So
that's the research
them,
question.
So we'll have a work session on that will specifically be addressing those concerns
and
questions.
Yes, and expecting that somehow the judges are not able to do what they want to do because there's some other way for us to enable them to accomplish this without having to have a specialty court.
Pre-adjudication.
Yeah,
you don't get them into the system.
Well,
they haven't even gone back to show the federal government. Of course, the federal government's tight for bucks. Then they've gone back to apply and say, hey, we've been successful. Give us another $350,000 grant.
Great.
They haven't done that yet either, I don't think so.
All right. Anything else we need
to do? What I wanted is to throw a question out there. I haven't heard anything from the dog kennel people as anybody else.
Dog kennel people?
Yeah, the last ruling was that they were denied.
Oh, Yuri and those
Yuri.
Guys. Oh, I gotcha.
And I didn't know what's going on.
I haven't heard anything.
So
actually,
I guess I'm thinking about being proactive rather than reactive, and I'm afraid that it might end up being more than what we want it to be, and I
Can we get something back from Marty on that? Because he had said that there are aspects, because of the appeal, that it became clear there are aspects of the kennel ordinance that, bless you, that need to be changed.
Internally, we're working on that. I haven't heard anything from the Bex.
But internally, you're working on it.
Go down to Bex.
Are you going to bring something? Yeah. Or when are you going to bring that back to us?
Next Wednesday?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I kind of shut you guys all out of this for today. Sorry. I blame the other elected officials.
Thank you.
That's it? Okay. Bill, you had a couple things you needed.
Just to verify, the hiring commissioner and executive's use of county property and equipment by the executive assistant shall be allowed to the same extent as the hiring commissioner to form his or her assigned task.
So he has a desk and a computer?
Yeah. So to the same extent, so should I give her the intern's office? Is that what we're going to do? That's the easiest way.
Again, the intern is still there.
Yeah,
but that she's there one morning a week.
Coming in and out.
Just one day a week. Madeline comes in Mondays. And
it's not all day, is it?
No, it's half day.
We'll schedule it.
But if each one of us had a private employee, do we have enough offices and to still have these guys have offices?
I made those office space for five commissioners.
Because the suggestion is putting her in the intern's office, and that's what, if all three of us end up having a private employee, there's not enough offices.
No,
so
it works really well to have her right there.
So you're thinking about putting a desk in there with a, well, he has a desk and computer, and so that's the same as he would have access to, so it's the same. It fits the policy.
Put a desk and computer in his office.
I think that's what he's asking for, isn't it?
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. That you're asking for a little desk and computer to be put in your office? Do you want, and then the conference table will take it out, or because it'd get crowded in there if you still have that conference table?
We'll make it work.
Okay. They'll figure out the configuration, but yeah, you have three votes. All right. Thank of course.
And we'll work on getting more jobs in the city.
Two quick things.
I look forward to having conversations about that versus some of the other stuff we've been spending time on. Seriously.
I'm still holding bills on the list of things that Commissioner Doar told me on. I need permission to pay CVTV's quarterly amount and one of the grants for the history grants to BYCX. May I have permission to pay those?
We have a grant that we just passed through.
One of the things on your list is all the history grants that you've approved already.
That's me. Doug offered once by Monday. I told him I didn't know.
BYCX does great work. I mean,
$11,500. You've already approved it.
I don't know. Can you give me in what's a...
On your list is a list of historical grants that you've already approved. We provide money to five or six grants. And this is the ability to pay them. They just want to be paid now.
This is a historical preservation grant they were already given?
Yes, correct.
So we already approved the grant.
Just
cutting
the check. It's all
yes.
It's all done.
So we got
this
grant
is just writing on the check now.
For Shalachie Prairie Railroad, I take it.
BYCX.
BYCX, and they already were granted. They were given the grant as part of the historical preservation
all
grant
of this has been approved. You just
pass through grants? You don't know.
Yes. Commissioner, all the stuff you asked me to stop is passed through. Everything on that list you asked me to do, dues, all this stuff is already approved. But you told me to stop paying.
He means grants that aren't our money. Historic preservation grants are a fee that was set by the state. It's a recording fee that is collected specifically for historic preservation.
You don't have a lawful ability to hold that back.
We could if we wanted to hold back those funds, but it's the you don't want to.
Do you know the list you just asked me about?
This is
two hours ago. That's one of the things on the list, Commissioner. It's one of the things on the list that you have me stopping until you approve it.
Okay, instead of going backwards, let's go forwards. How about that?
That's what I'm doing.
I know, but you're rehashing things. So we have two items. One of them is
CVTV quarterly payments,
$108,000. Hold on.
BYCX,
$11,500. Keep breathing, man. BYCX is the first one, and that was the historic preservation grant. We go with cutting the check.
We are on track with them.
Yeah, but for BYCX, let's do that one first.
Yeah, we're good.
We're good?
Yeah.
On that?
Wait a minute. I want to make sure I understand. Here's how I hope not to address these. Is that in the last, I have to leave at 5 o'clock. In the last couple minutes of the meeting, I found out about we got something. I have no idea how much money it is or if it's just simply a pass-through grant from someplace else through here that we just simply passed through. If that be the way it is, then that's fine, of course. I'm just trying to find those areas that are discretionary coming from our general fund, that is coming from
that we could be using for other priorities.
Sure.
And should we think that through? We understand what that is.
And we did in a hearing, and I'm actually chair of the Historic Preservation Grants Committee, and there's a whole rating process, and then we in a public hearing actually approved those grants in a long process. And Greg Kinsey is actually the coach and vice chair of that one. But as far as, it's not general fund money. Those are fees that were generated by the state as a recording fee that we then get to distribute for historic preservation projects.
So sometimes we'll be concerned if we have to have matching funds.
Sure, and this isn't one of those. This is going to nonprofits and other organizations to do historic preservation.
So for that one, that sounds like a lot of work has gone into that, and it's designated for that, and so I'm good.
Cool. All right. Now, CVTV.
Intergovernmental agreement that we signed, and that we pay them quarterly $108,000.
And we receive services for that, and the services are they are required to air a certain number of programs from the county, including Clark County Focus, Clark County Close Up,
the board meetings.
And that's all part of the price we pay. We don't pay by event with them.
I got that. The FDTV also could potentially be
separate thing.
That's separate. This is just the contraction with CVTV for the government side of it. FDTV and the pay grant side of it is a separate piece. The FDTV, that's money directly given to them, or the pay grants is separate. CVTV is, it's not the same.
Where is this money coming from?
From the franchise fees that we get. We get over $1 million a year.
From
CVTV or FDTV? I'm sorry, CVTV.
We get franchise fees from Comcast to the tune of $1.1 million, and this comes from that.
Okay, and then, all right, it sounds like you guys think it's appropriate to pay that.
Yeah.
Okay, I would do so, but in the future, in fact, here's what I'd like to do is use this as a feedback way for me to know how not to do this, how not to address this. Well, let's not wait till we get invoices in to have this hurry up, you got to pay it kind of conversation. Let's you and I sit down, Bill, so I understand, walk through those and help me to know so that we can just release them ahead of time before the bill ever comes in, or have a conversation about
it. And then the process has already occurred.
Yes, right.
Excellent.
Up to speed.
Can I get a list of the ones that you have?
Well, yeah, Bill has a little bit of money. Yeah.
Perfect. All right.
Do you add to that? Because I'm kind of learned on the reward side, and I haven't got there yet because I have to find codes as to what department and what fund it comes from. So I'm looking at some of those, and I'm not up to speed, but I'm not going to hold it back. But I have a couple with big red flags,
sure,
that I don't understand. So.
Good. Yeah, and we'll get those clarified. You had one last
three work sessions. Commissioner Madore wants to have the work session on the parks and a local agreement. Mike Mayberry wants a follow-up on surface mining standards, and Wiesman wants to brief you on the May huge exercises we're having in May.
Question. Parks, a local agreement. Is this a continuation of we're waiting for word back from the consultant?
Yes.
So can we make sure that they're there?
We get the consultant?
I don't want to have a presentation, but can we at least have someone have them there to answer questions for us?
Yeah. They'll be the same meeting, right?
Yep.
It's all the duration of the same meeting. Because I know that I'm very concerned whether or not I want to continue as a conglomerate with Vancouver. Mm-hmm. I keep eyeballing that $880,000, and I keep thinking I could build a humane society out there for
Well, you can't save all of it unless you completely stop doing parks. You know that.
Has something scheduled to produce a last?
No, I'm thinking, and I have to have a better understanding from Pete Capel as to what we're doing and what they're doing. Because they do some maintenance, and we do some maintenance. And I'm thinking that I think I could give Pete some a couple FTEs. And do everything.
He had that, and that was the proposal that saved us like $350 or something total. That was one of the proposals we had. But as far as the timing goes, 6 months ahead of time, if we're going to be separating, we need to give notice. So it is a good time by late April at least, we should have that work session.
Yeah, but I want to hear back from the consultant.
No, I agree, but we should be getting that report. I forget when it is, but it's
there. I do not suggest that we bring the consultants into this conversation. I don't want to work with a consultant. I want to work with the elected officials in the PRAC.
I agree, but I want the recommendations from them.
Well, they're already on schedule to give us a report.
Right.
Is that the 30th of this month or next month, Bill?
I don't think it's scheduled.
This month.
They're coming back to Vancouver in April.
So find out when. Well, if they're coming back, then they have the report. So
we just have one meeting instead of two. We have the consultants come and give their briefing. We can have our work session, have them attend our work session, and update us with their knowledge and their findings, and then we can go back and address or make our next step.
Yeah, I think having as much information as possible before we make a major shift in how we provide park service is a good idea. And I agree, though, having the whole thing be a presentation and negotiation with I'm with you on that. But just having, like, if they've got, here are the things that we came up with, great. But then we also, but the primary focus of the work session is to get information, but for us to be able to have the conversation about, all right, what does this look like and what is the most efficient way to move forward? Because before June 1, or whenever that is, we need to be making a decision about how we're going to move. I'm with doing a work session on that, by end of April, I would say.
Work sessions with consultants.
Our staff. Well, it would be with one meeting, get the recommendations that came out of the report, but the primary conversations between us and our staff and any questions we might have for the consultant in their recommendations or findings. But it's not for the purpose of giving, it's the same work session.
Oh, yeah.
But not a work session just with a big presentation and a bunch of slides from the consultant.
No, we don't want that.
Exactly. Cool. I think we're all on the same page with that.
So, Bill, you're going to check and see when the consultant
is. I thought. Yeah.
And we can have Laura present that.
All right.
You want to talk about Vancouver? EMS2.
Oh, geez. EMS2, just quickly, we had talked briefly at the dais about how do we move forward and have the conversation. My request is on at least a quarterly basis, we try to every year have the chair and the administrator meet with the mayor and the city manager to talk about issues that are going on. So my request is, like, on a short term, I'd like to have Bill and myself meet with Holmes and Levin to find out what the heck is going on.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Is that okay?
That was one thing that came up. We don't know what they're saying.
I literally have no idea.
What their goal is.
Tim hasn't mentioned it to me. I get a letter from Eric, and I'm like, I don't know what's underlying this, but I kind of want to find out.
Yeah. So you bring that back to us.
Yeah, yeah, and then I'll bring it back to you guys.
Thanks.
All right, cool.
Thank you,
everybody.
All right. See?
4 and 5.
All right.
This is a clatter test.
Yeah, it kind of was. Seriously, dude. I was kind of fidgeting right at the end. I was like, all right, got to go.
There's
lots of
stuff.
Oh, no doubt.
All right.